obviously children don't live in isolation, so in order to address this, it's the families and the households you need to support, not just the children. And you know, we do have child benefit, which is wonderful. It's a universal payment. But what you do see is so many families in Ireland are surviving on very low incomes, less than, you know, €11,000 per annum. And so they don't have a very good quality of life. And when you look at children, the chances are that poverty will impact on them throughout their lives. And they may end up living in difficult circumstances when they're adults as well.
Yeah, and I mean, sometimes people can have a narrative about poor people that maybe they weren't enterprising enough, or they did something wrong or whatever. But when you look at children, it's very hard to make any of those assertions, isn't it? Because nobody can be blamed for the family or the circumstances that they're born into.
No, absolutely not. And I suppose it's incredibly difficult for those children and their families. And I suppose a lot of the narrative around poverty is misleading, because when you look at the Silk statistics, those most likely to be at risk of poverty are people who are unemployed. Within families in particular, it's lone parent households or families in which there's somebody with a disability. And then the other group who are most at risk of poverty, obviously, are people with a disability and people living in poor accommodation. So what it all points to is if you don't have sufficient income and supports around you, because obviously if you have a family where there's a caring responsibility, you can't go and take employment if you have a caring responsibility. If you can't access a service to provide the care for you, so whether it's childcare or caring for an elderly relative, obviously we're all very aware of the issues around disability in Ireland and the struggles that families supporting a person with a disability face. And as you say, children can't be blamed for not being enterprising enough. You know, it's no fault of a child in what region of the country it's born. They've no say over that. So I think what we really need to do is look at universal services, really high quality services designed to support those children. And that starts with services supporting families in the home, whether it's childcare or other kind of services a family needs. Then obviously you need to look at early childhood education as distinct from childcare, because childcare obviously serves a particular purpose, but early childhood education can really sort of impact on those inequalities that a child already faces and do something to address those issues and sort of maybe bring them up onto parity with their peers. And then it's the whole way through the education system. For example, the new DESH plan was published at the beginning of February and acknowledged that it needed ongoing resources, and they're going to change their criteria so more schools can access the DESH program. And one of the things that was pointed out in the plan is the challenge that particular areas face, in that the schools in those areas have a very high concentration of children from, you know, disadvantaged socioeconomic backgrounds, yet they have a real challenge in terms of attracting the best teachers, offering the range of subjects that children in other schools are offered, and all those other supports. So, you know, children in those schools are also at a disadvantage just in terms of the subjects they can pick for their junior cert and leaving cert through no fault of their own. So, you know, there's a lot of things that can be addressed. It's not just income, but obviously when you're looking at a family, you do need to look at the income that's coming into the household.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned single parents are in particular, they seem to be very vulnerable to poverty, and their children also very vulnerable to poverty.
Yes, and I suppose the two key issues there are the cost of housing and also the cost of childcare, because in terms of a proportion of your income, the childcare costs in Ireland are the highest in the European Union. So for a single parent, for example, looking to go out to work, the net income, the net salary that that person would need to earn in order to pay housing costs and pay for childcare would be in excess of at least €50,000. You know, so that's a significant income for most of us. But if you are to cover your housing costs and the huge cost of childcare because you're doing it on your own, the net salary you need to bring home is quite high, you know. And, you know, when if you look at the average, the median income in the state, and the median salary in Ireland borders around the €25,000-€30,000 mark. I mean, a lot of people are clustered around that mark, and that's okay if you're living in a household with another adult. But when it's just one person in that household and you're not on your own, perhaps you have dependents, trying to support people on that salary is very difficult. So I suppose we need to look at the costs faced by lone parents and other households, and we all know the issues with the cost of housing and childcare. Those are the two key costs that are preventing those parents, you know, going back into the workforce and generating an income for themselves and, you know, seeing their salary increase over time. More often than not, they're actually stuck until their child is over the age of 8 or 9 and, you know, is staying in school a little longer. And even then, more often than not, they're stuck with part-time employment, which still won't give you sufficient income to provide things that you might want for your child.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you mentioned the need for a net salary of 50,000. Like, a lot of people would feel trapped as single parents because, as you say, they will lose most of their benefits if they start working, and then they have to pay for everything, and the amount they have to pay for is so high that it's very hard to even access that, and you can't go in at the level of work that would make it meaningful or would make it worthwhile. And I know you've suggested some changes in social welfare that might help this or make this easier for people to transition, either for people who are unemployed or for single parents to transition into work rather than have it be an all or nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, the one thing you would really need to do is, we're not the only organisation saying this, is to taper the benefits so that when someone moves into employment, they don't lose everything immediately. And also to look at the kind of step off point. So, for example, someone might be offered more hours, maybe just 5-10 extra hours a week. And maybe the income generated from that won't be huge, but that might push them €2 or €3 over the threshold for the medical card, for example. And the medical card will be worth a lot more to a family, especially with children, than the, you know, that slight increase in income. So it's to look at how you design tapering of benefits to take into account those issues. Also to look at, obviously, the cost of housing is key. So supply is the issue there. And, you know, we're on record making proposals around supply. We have, and the Minister for Social Protection last year actually raised this issue, which we've been raising for a while, is benchmark social welfare payments. Obviously, we propose that social welfare payments should be benchmarked against gross average industrial earnings, which was the agreement in the early 2000s, because at least at that point you have some sort of parity and connection with where wages in the economy are going and where inflation is going, so that the money you get from social welfare, if it's static, obviously, even though it's not reducing, the real value of it is falling. You need to make sure that rates for children are adequate, but also look at things like the living wage or how we bring down the cost of living. But it's because it's the cost of living that's pushing families into poverty. And in particular, it's motor insurance now has risen exponentially in the past 12 months, housing, childcare. So you need to look at how the state can also provide quality childcare and early years education. And that requires money, a significant amount of money. But if you could do that, then you would take huge pressure off families and off wages, because realistically, no one is going to walk into a job with a very high net salary, you know, having been out of employment for a number of years raising your children. I mean, none of us can expect a high net salary at the moment unless you're in particular industries. But in order to take the pressure off wages, government needs to reduce the cost of living. And the challenge is, with all the public sector pay talks ongoing at the moment, any concessions there is going to take away any extra money that's available for the budget in the coming year. And I mean, that's been stated publicly already. At least 2/3 of that money has now been absorbed by concessions to the Gardaí, to doctors and other groups, which may be very valid, but those concessions are being driven by the cost of living. And government needs to address the cost of living. And the problem is, we'll arrive in October and there won't be any money for any other groups in society, particularly children living in poverty.
Yeah. But how realistic is it for the government to be able to have any impact on the cost of living?
Well, it can certainly have an impact on the cost of housing. Fine Gael have been in government, this is their second term. The housing crisis has been unfolding since 2012-13, and gradually, I mean, the fact that we didn't build enough houses is, we've been on record saying that since 2000. We know that. But they aren't. Government is doing nothing about housing supply. That's the one thing government can control, because government can go and borrow money on the market. It has an AMA. It can create a special purpose vehicle. It can go. The money is available. We've shown how it can be done. And we're not the only group saying this. The National Economic and Social Council is also saying this. Government needs to go and borrow money and let local authorities build houses. Because once you start building housing units, for a start, they're a one-off cost, you only build them once, then they're an asset that the state owns. And what you're also doing is taking families off the housing waiting list, but you're also taking the pressure off the private rented market. So you're going to bring rents in the private sector down. But realistically, they have to do something about the cost of housing. And the other biggest cost for families is the cost of childcare. And while we're seeing, you know, tinkering around the edges, we're not seeing the scale of money that you would need going into either of those two areas. And until such time as they do that, I mean, the cost of living is actually going to increase, and you're just going to see more and more pressure on wages in the public and in the private sector, because people just aren't going to be able to afford the things that we consider just the basic necessities.